Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Den här podcasten presenteras av Sonos.
Is that card?
Those are very nice boots.
Made out of a real Italian man. Beautiful Italian man was made out of them. Do you have any tequila? This interview is encroaching on cocktail hour.
I got you some water, please.
My wife's grandmother's piano.
Really?
Yeah, we inherited it when she died.
It sounds beautiful in this room. I was walking around earlier, and without much to do, and I was dying to talk about myself for a few hours. With real no recourse. And I just was randomly thrown into a van, and I woke up in this apartment with a slight metallic taste in my mouth and a Band-Aid on my temple. And this man, Frederick Straga, took the duct tape off my wrists very gently. He soaked them for a good 20 minutes in soapy water because I have very hairy wrists. And So now I'm here in front of this microphone in a whimsical adult's playroom, and I think this is going to work out. I don't have any intention of leaving. There's cookies and tequila here. What else could I possibly need out of life?
Yeah, those are gingerbread cookies and the glasses.
Oh, Frederick, hello.
Hi.
Come on in. Can we do sound effects? Like, I see some Alan Moore up there. Do you have any swamp thing up there? Do you have like the full Alan Moore, or do you just have the wannabe Watchmen and From Hell?
I don't have the swamp thing, but I have...
The real heads have swamp thing.
Well, I would rather say that the real heads have Promethea.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's more hardcore, because Swamp Thing is kind of old school, but if you're into his new stuff... So yeah. Alan Moore, of course, is the comic book writer who...
Yeah.
That I'm a huge fan of.
Yeah. Have you bought and pretended that you've read Jerusalem yet?
I haven't. Please tell me about Jerusalem, because I don't really know much about it.
I have not even cracked the... I have not opened it.
So what's that book about?
I have no idea. I have not read even the dust sleeve. I couldn't tell you what it's about. I have no idea what the plot points of Jerusalem are. I couldn't. If you put a gun to my head, I'd be a dead man. A Sonos. You know, the great part of being a marginally successful indie rock star is that any room that you walk into, I don't know how they do it, but just about any room I walk into now has like a Sonos in it.
Yeah, they're actually the sponsors of this podcast.
Oh, really?
Yes, they are.
No shit.
So they...
Well, I gotta just publicly thank Sonos for... being so forthright with their gear.
Yeah, it's quite handy. You know, I never used to play music in my bathroom before, but now I listen to the Misfits while taking a shower, and it's a special feeling.
Oh, Diamond Gloss.
Yes, it's funny.
Did you see that? Is this a thing? Are you fucking with me?
No, it was actually there in my record collection. You Must Be Certain of the Devil, an album by Diamond Gloss. Yeah. And you, I think that you wanted to play me a track of hers.
Yeah, yeah. I've been, all I can listen to these days is like Christian music or like gospel music. It's like the only thing.
So which track of Diamond Gloss did you want to play?
Let My People Go.
Okay, let's listen to it.
Yeah.
The devil has designed my death and is waiting to be sure. Plenty of his black sheep die before he finds a cure. Oh, Lord Jesus, do you think I've served my time? The eight legs of the devil now are crawling up my spine.
Well, she has a very powerful voice.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when I first heard about her, everyone was saying that she could shatter glass just by singing. I'm not sure if that was true, but...
Yeah, I think it is. I think there's like... I think there's real evidence of that.
One thing that I saw with my own eyes, though, was when she played her in Stockholm a few years ago, she pounded the grand piano. I mean, she was really going at the piano.
Yeah.
And she hits one of the keys so hard that she breaks a string on the piano. Oh, I've never seen that happen.
God.
And the string goes flying through the air. Right. And everyone wonders what it is. But it's,
that is a total... That's like paranormal... Because you can only hit a piano key so hard. You know what I mean? Like, you can't... It's something vibratory, and it has to do with other strings in the piano that are, like, that are... It's if you can break a piano string like that... Because I'm sure this was, like, a new... I'm sure that the piano that she used had was, like, standard issue... Like, you have to, there is like, it's like solving, to break a piano string is like basically the equivalent of solving a Rubik's Cube. There's like a sequential, like an almost impossible statistical chance that you'll break a piano string.
So you could never pound that piano
hard enough. No, because it's like unlocking, because you're talking about like air vibrating. You're talking about like crazy crazy tension shit that is like required to do that. Unless you're just talking about wear and tear. But if you're talking about like a piano that's been prepared to, you know, be performed and like, you know, I don't know. I don't know where she was playing. Anyway, but I'll break the string later. Is that Terry Richardson?
Yes, those are Polaroids.
That's a lot of pictures of Terry Richardson.
Yes, those are self-portraits that he took.
Oh my God.
Polaroids.
1, 2, 3. For those of you at home, okay, 1, 2. We're talking about 30 Polaroids of Terry Richardson.
Has he taken your picture?
Someone help me. I need to get out of this room immediately. No, he's never taken my picture. It just occurred to me why my mustache is so terrifying to people.
Because it makes them think of Terry Richardson.
Well, it makes them think of... It is a very... I mean, so this mustache is a new thing.
Because he used to have a beard, right?
Right. I had a beard for a long time.
Like this biblical beard.
Yeah. The beard was like a big, big part of my last album cycle. Because that album was so male. And like the character that I created over the course of the touring was this kind of like hyper male, like a sweaty suit wearing hyper male. And that beard was like a big part of it. And this album, I don't know what the character's called yet. Like the character of the last album was called The Ideal Husband. The character on the first album was called The Weird American. And I think this character is the comedian, you know, And there's something about like the dandy-ish performative quality of the mustache. It is, it's meant to be sort of unsettling. It's kind of meant to like, which I've had no problem doing. I accidentally looked at Twitter after SNL, like 3 or 4 days after SNL. I was like drunk. This is what I do. I will get...
You get drunk and you Google yourself.
Yeah, I will get drunk and it's like 4 or 5 in the morning and I will look, I will go, the only way to get higher or drunker than I am right now is to self-harm, is to cause myself psychic self-harm.
I'm afraid that I'm guilty of the same thing.
Yeah, or it's something like I'm so numb right now from like booze,
but you need to feel pain
or whatever it is. Yeah, totally. Yeah. Or you're like where it's like I won't be able to feel it or something. So you can like look at this stuff. And I mean, I'm making this. I mean, let's not underestimate how serious what I'm talking about is, please. But the mustache elicits serious revulsion. I mean, it really disgusts people. And it's so symbolic.
And you think that might have something to do with Terry Richardson and the way that some people are?
Well, no, I think that he is like clearly a creep. I mean, he's. I mean, I don't think I'm saying anything new. That he's. I mean, he's a deeply kind of suspect individual.
I'm a huge fan of his photography, but does the mustache make you feel more like dirty or?
I think what's really disturbing about the mustache is that I actually think that I look really handsome with the mustache, and I think that is what informs what really disturbs people about it is because it's so dysmorphic or something where it's like I think. But that's what really disturbs people is like he thinks that he looks really good. If he thinks that, then God only knows what else he thinks. Like he is so disconnected from reality because he so clearly looks like borderline, like, you know, criminal. Something, there's something, the mustache really tests the limits of the rational. And that makes people really uncomfortable.
I'm afraid I can't grow a mustache because my...
What?
My facial hair is too, you know, it's not thick enough. It looks, you know, I literally look like a pedophile if I try to grow a mustache.
Well, that's the elephant in the room, really, is that the mustache is most commonly associated with pedophilia. So for someone to make that choice to have a mustache, when you know that they must know this, you know that they must know that a mustache is basically like the emoji of pedophilia. Like you look at the mustached emoji, like the emoji with the mustache, and you think, oh, the pedophile emoji. And like, knowing what we know about mustaches and about the collective wisdom about what they represent, that someone would go ahead anyway and have a mustache. But the real truth behind the mustache is that after Trump, I went on a bender and then really drunkenly started shaving. And I started shaving underneath. I have nightmares where I shave my beard off. Do you know what I mean? Like nightmares where I'm just like, oh no, what did I do? No, like my, and you know, and I have anxiety. And I got like halfway through and I started to see my neck skin for the first time. And I was like, oh my God. The nightmare is happening. The nightmare, I think that's probably where the correlation was like Trump nightmare, now I'm shaving like I do in my nightmares. I think that was the cognitive correlation. But I got as far as my neck, and I was like, I cannot shave. If I were to shave the mustache off, as weird as I look with this mustache, I am like unrecognizable without a mustache. Like, I become like a completely different person, and I was not ready for that.
The Iron Hand, it ain't no match on the Iron Rod. The strongest wall will crumble and fall to
You're a mighty God.
I think Bob Dylan reacted to the 80s in a way that I really relate to, where he was just like, fuck. Like, now shit is now so fucked that I have to paint in such broad strokes that I actually, that I think I actually believe in the Christian God. Because he saw this coming, and he, which is basically like the apocalypse coming. And if the apocalypse is coming, then you need a God. And that's why this song exists, and that's why I love it.
Yeah, I've never been a huge Dylan fan, though I love the songs that Nina Simone has recorded.
Yeah.
Like, just like Tom Thumb's Blues. And but he,
yeah,
you know, he got the Nobel Prize in Literature last year?
Yeah.
Which felt kind of awkward, because, you know, they've been ignoring, they've been ignoring American authors for 23 years, ever since Toni Morrison got it. And then instead of giving the Nobel Prize of Literature to, say, Joyce Carol Oates or Joan,
or Jonathan Franzen
or Joan Didion, you know, they gave it to Bob Dylan. You know, it felt,
I'm kidding about Jonathan Franzen, Jesus Christ, relax.
It's almost like when Barack Obama got the Nobel Peace Prize, you know. It was like embarrassing,
very
for,
weird,
you know. Maybe it was so embarrassing, and maybe that's why Bob Dylan didn't come here too.
They should have had like a drone put it on him. Can we talk about Barack Obama getting the Nobel Peace Prize for a second?
By all means.
I think that's an interesting topic. But what do you think about Barack Obama getting the Nobel Peace Prize as a European?
It felt like when they gave the Nobel Peace Prize to Yasser Arafat, and I don't remember who was the president of Israel, but, you know, Barack Obama was at war when he got the Nobel Peace
Prize.
Yes,
of course. The ironies abound. Like, there are core fucking irony. Like,
you know, Guantanamo prison was still open when he got the Nobel Peace Prize.
Of course. But the Nobel Peace Prize, when I'm saying that it's abstract, when I'm saying it's symbolic, it is not, like, it is, I mean, on that criteria, you would give the Nobel Peace Prize to me. Like, in that case, like, I would be a more worthy recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize, because I've never even hit anyone, you know?
Really?
Like,
never been in a fist fight whatsoever?
Never.
No.
No. I'm such a fucking pussy, man. I
he knows your needs even before you ask.
Do you know why it's impossible for an American president to have facial hair?
No.
I don't think that there's been a single president since like the 19th century that has had facial hair.
Oh, so you're really asking me why?
Yeah,
I could speculate. Yeah. Because I think what it is that facial hair is subject to change. It's basically like if a president had a beard and then they shaved, we could bomb like 12... like weddings in Yemen on the same day, and people would be talking about the fact that he had shaved. It would be like so. It would be like so. You know what I mean? Like the president shaving would be like it would. It's actually a brilliant strategy for any American president, is to go into office with a beard and then just to campaign with a beard, to like just have a beard all the time. But then when you knew those fucking tax returns were coming out, then you shave, and the media would not be able to, no one would be able to talk about anything else other than the fact that you'd shaved.
My eyes are dry, my faith is old, my heart is hard, my prayers are cold, and I know how I ought to be alive to you and dead to me.
Keith Green is a wonderful Christian man who died at 28 in a plane crash, and who wrote very ahead of his time, self-aware Christian music that was like largely addressed at other Christians and at the plight of being a Christian, instead of being like fire and brimstone music aimed at non-believers.
I've never heard of Keith Green before, but this is insanely beautiful. I love the way he shouts the lyrics to the audience right before he sings it, so they can all, you know, join in and sing together.
Yeah, that's...
You know, that's a beautiful way of getting people involved. Actually, you're just shouting in the lyrics right before you sing it. I read the sleeve notes to your new album, True Comedy, where you say that life on Earth is a demented joke, and you suggest that we set a new standard.
Well, that it bears more of a resemblance to a demented joke than it bears resemblance to any kind of like master plan, is what I said.
And then you suggest that we set a new standard for happiness, that instead of like thinking about how rich we are or, you know, whether we're at peace with the universe, we should just be happy the way that people used to be happy thousands of years ago when, you know, a nice day, being happy was living through another day without getting eaten by a bear.
Right.
And there's this great quote from you where you suggest that we define progress in a new way as well. What if progress only meant literally progressing from one day to the next without getting violently dismembered by a 9-foot-tall, 500-pound grizzly? You know, that is a way of defining happiness, too.
Yeah. I mean, getting dismembered by a grizzly is some people's idea of a great day. But yeah, I mean, I think that happiness is incredibly difficult. Like, success or fame, any of these things that are so, like, fame and success is this banana peel that we keep slipping on over and over. We know how unhappy it makes people. We know that it makes them rich, but we also know that it makes them isolated and miserable and in crisis 24 hours a day and incapable of anonymity, incapable of doing any of the normal things that are the substance of a life. But we still hold it up as this thing that like everyone wants. Mostly because we're like a hyper materialist culture that has a very simple equation of like money equals painlessness.
But there must be some level of fame that's good for you or nice.
There is. There is.
You know, I think that John Waters, the director, once said that anyone who approaches him knows him.
Yes.
And has, in general, nice things to say. So, John Waters is never approached by someone who's just like, oh, you're that guy from TV.
Right.
You know, well, they will know what he's about.
And that's why people...
And he has a mustache.
Right, has a mustache. That's why people with incredible anxiety usually seek out fame, which seems counterintuitive, but there is something... Like, anybody who's famous, do not for a second believe that they did not make that happen for themselves. Because... It is a process, and you have to make choices all along that road to continue. There are a lot of moments where you can pull the ripcord and go, no, I've had enough. I don't want this. Anybody who has fame has made, myself included, like whatever. I mean, you could take my amount of fame and like drown it in the sink, but I still have some, and I have made choices to have it. And a lot of it does have to do with that thing that you're talking about, that John Waters thing, where it's like a way of diffusing social anxiety because people approach you as a known quantity instead of having to prove yourself. The irony being that you then have to prove yourself in increasingly more obscene, insane ways to maintain that thing. But a lot of it does have to do with that. I mean, we forget that famous people have social, I mean, they have like, they live 24 hours a day like any of us. And those 24 hours are filled with any number of like social interactions or whatever. But you're talking about people who are so anxious that those interactions are worth diffusing by taking the most insane route imaginable, namely fame. You know, I mean, it's crazy. There was a time when I had a beard down to like my abdomen. And that felt like a normal length beard to me.
Is that actually a psychological term, beard dysmorphia?
It is now. Yeah, DBS is what it's called. is what it's called in the psychiatric community. But you can have a beard that's like down to here. For the, you at home, I'm pointing to like my fourth shirt button, and it feels like a normal beard. Now, when I look at pictures of myself with that beard, I'm like, Jesus fucking Christ. Why, you know, like I see it for what it was, which is like basically like the I am beard guy beard. Identify as a human, as someone with a beard, which is like a truly pathetic state of being.
You know, actually, Michael Stipe was sitting in that chair a few months ago with a huge beard.
Yeah,
do you think he might have had beard dysmorphia as well?
Absolutely. He would say the same thing.
Because it went down to his balls. You know,
if he was sitting here, he would say the same thing. He would say, he'd say, no, this is like a normal beard length. Like, yeah, he'd be like, yeah, I know it's a little long. But his idea of a little long is like comes up way short of what it actually is. Because it's this process. It's this long process of acceptance. You learn to accept more and more extreme lengths as normal. And this is fame. You wake up one day and you go, holy shit. This has gotten too long. This beard has gotten too long, even for me. Now, if Tom Cruise could somehow miraculously get brain wiped and become like a normal and become a citizen, just like your average citizen. And then if you were to show him pictures of Tom Cruise, the Tom Cruise, he would go, that's the most fucked up thing I've ever seen in my life. No one should have that level of fame. That man must be miserable. And then you'd go, Tom Cruise, that was you before Josh Tillman wiped your brain with his beard. And then he would die a psychic death.
El Shaddai, El Shaddai, El Elyon Adonai, age to age.
Going with my theme of Christian songs, very sentimental Christian music, this is El Shaddai by Amy Grant.
El Shaddai, Echam Kana Adonai, we will praise and lift you high, El Shaddai.
Through your love. So how come you got into Christian music so much?
Well, you know, recently?
Every single song that you've played here has been...
Yeah, because it just, I don't
quite
know.
Quite Christian. But, I mean, you grew up in a very Christian home, right?
Yeah. My parents were just kind of your average suburban Protestant evangelical Christians with some weird psychological issues that really made things interesting. The school I went to in fourth grade was a speaking in tongues.
Speaking in tongues?
Yeah.
How do you do that? How do you...
Well, it turns out that your first day of school, a bunch of classmates gather around you and start speaking gibberish until you realize that you're not getting out of this situation until you make something up, which I did after about 15 minutes. And then from that day onward, every morning, there was like 15 minutes of like mandatory prayer language time. And it would just, it was just like 11 kids in a room, like speaking gibberish out loud.
Is that something that you could use while making music? Just, you know, letting yourself go completely?
Yeah, no, I do it. I do it a lot. I sing, you know, if you hear me sing, I sing a lot of non-verbal, like I sing all the time. Like, I do it all the time. In my concerts, like I sing singing non-verbally is really psychedelic.
El Shaddai, El Shaddai, El Elyon Adonai, age to age you're still the same, by the power of the name, El Shaddai.
There's a line in your new song, Leaving LA, that I found quite unsettling. You sing about your first memory when you nearly choked to death on a piece of candy in a department store while a radio was playing Fleetwood Mac's Little Lies in the background.
Yeah.
And it's just that I have a one-year-old son, and he's crawling around on the floor and he puts everything in his mouth. And I'm so afraid of him choking yeah. something.
Right.
So I could totally relate to that
God.
Moment.
Oh,
so
God.
What happened exactly?
Were
you able to breathe?
First, what I'd like to do, can you look up the year Sweet Little Lies came out? I was talking to this psychologist in Denmark, and he was telling me that everyone has a lost in the mall memory.
Little Lies by Fleetwood Mac came out in 1987.
Tell me lies, tell me sweet little lies. Tell me lies, tell me lies.
1987. Okay, so that's about right.
So you were five,
I was born
five
in 81,
years old.
So I was like, oh, yeah, six years five, old. Five, six. Yeah. If my math is.
So who saved you? Because you were choking.
Some guy. Some random. This is my, memory is like, obviously memory is like, so you cannot trust your memory. You know what I mean? Like memory is like a creative act. But I want to say that he had on, there was this certain type of stitching that was really common in the 80s where very sporadic, like it would be like pink, white, and blue stitching on.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Like a brown coat, but then this like really erratic kind of smattering of like little stitching squares.
It sounds like a Bill Cosby sweater.
Yeah, no, it was like less garish than that, but it was like I don't know the name for it, but I remember like looking at the shoulder of this guy and looking as I was choking, like looking at the little threads in his left shoulder of his jacket or of his overcoat. And then he gave me like the Heimlich. I remember the sound of like the candy, like skittering, across the the floor. And my mom, screaming. We had a very dark it was a very dark scene. And I remember thinking like, oh my God, she loves me. Like she's worried that I'm gonna die.
And you
like
were you were surprised by realizing that?
Yeah, it was just sort of this like animal thing, that like, you're a kid and you're thinking like, oh my God, like if I died, she would be really sad. Like maybe this first moment in life of like not taking one's existence for granted. But all the while, this fucking song is playing. This peppy song. I just remember thinking like, this is a joke. Like I'm on another godless trip to the mall with my getting dragged around the mall and this weird song this is playing, all these things at once, you know, like the revulsion, the I had a very like kind of cynical react, you know, I was like, this is how I'm gonna die. It's like in this, with this, over this weird person's shoulder at the mall, you know, as a child with this song playing, but my mom loves me, and so it's okay.
Somebody just look back over your life and see where it brought you from. How many of you know prayer changes? I heard that prayer changes. I believe that prayer changes. I know that prayer changes things. Prayer changes. I heard that prayer changes. I believe that prayer changes. I know that prayer changes things.
This is an R. Kelly song called Prayer Changes, which makes me... There's this one... So it's like these three verses, this like family, this family's life. But you don't realize that they're all in the same family until the very end. You realize they're all in the same family. And he fucking wraps this thing in a fucking bow at the end, and it's just so life-affirming. But yeah, Prayer Changes.
So hard. My God, sometimes I'd fall. Mama asks what happened to me, and I take up for him. She said the devil's a liar, and pray God get rid of him. And now I'm going to school, hitting those books, I'm doing fine. He's out my life, I'm not confused, got peace of mind, man. I tell you,
prayer changes things. Prayer changes.
I'm a witness.
Prayer changes. Prayer changes things. What I love about R. Kelly is there's so much space in his arrangements. I think once the trap thing took off and it was just like this frantic, like these triplets like all over the place, you know, like and every fucking, it seriously is the equivalent of like in rock music where you like, you have to hit a fill like every four bars, you know, you've got to go like, and it gives you no, there's no tension. And that's like what drives me insane about most like modern R&B is like, it's just so like, it's so everything all the time.
My future could not see. I had lost all my beliefs and gave up on all.
Now, this track is about people being helped by praying. Have you prayed a lot yourself?
I pray a lot these days.
So you do believe in God, even though...
No. I believe that you are only going to interact with God through other people.
So Little Lies by Fleetwood Mac is not something that you would put on now and listen to.
Tell me lies, tell me sweet little lies. And it honestly fills me with like, not like kind of like the, you know, that feeling like that low, that blood sugar kind of crash. Since I didn't grow up on any of this music, I mean, to be honest, like when I hear Michael Jackson, I feel nothing. I just think like, I get it. It doesn't like move me, you know, you know what I mean? So that whole era of music, of like pop music, it doesn't do anything for me. I just, because I missed that boat. I don't have any, no one likes anything objectively. We only like music for like weird, like abstract sentimental reasons. And people who do like music for objective reasons are music critics who...
But what would be an objective reason to...
Who understand music about as much as I understand sculpture.
Yeah, I think it's difficult to even, you know, call something objective when you right. talk about music.
Of course.
Everything makes you think yeah. of something else.
Of course. So. That's the beauty. That's like, you know, that's the harmonic structure of the appreciation of everything. It's like the way the air smelled when you heard it, or like the part time of life that you were in when you heard something. And those see, now we're so deranged, like we think like that we're post enlightenment, you know, whatever. But like those, that subjectivity actually makes the enjoyment of music. It doesn't make it inauthentic. It deepens it. It makes it so much more rich. I have this experience all the time where like I take a band on tour, you know, and I don't really know anything about them. I maybe know a little bit about them, but then we go on tour and we play 30 shows together and we hang out every night and we're doing this and we're having this shared experience. And all of a sudden I fucking love their music. You know, I've heard it. I know it. I brought them on tour because I'd heard it and I liked it. But then after that tour, then I'm like, oh, this shit is fucking beautiful. You know, and I know what's going on. It's like, now I know them. Now I love them. And there's something, you know, in their music that is now, there's some skin in the game. You know, it's like now it's a living, breathing thing. It's not just some like bullshit, like critical mental process.
You let me violate you. You let me desecrate you. You let me penetrate you.
We've listened to a lot of Christian music. I'd like to play you something a bit more secular.
Mm. Help me, I broke apart my insides. Help me, I've got no soul to sell. Help me, the only thing that works for me. Help me get away from myself.
See, I disagree. This is a fucking, this is a God song.
You think so?
Oh, hell yes.
This is Closer by Nine Inch Nails, which you've played a few times live. Yeah. And I remember you introduced this song with the classical words. It's a little sappy, but I'd like to play you my favorite love song.
Oh, how delightfully arch. God, that Josh Tillman, he is just incorrigible. You know why that's a God song?
Why? Tell me.
Okay. Because the most prominent figure in a Christian's life is Satan, and the most prominent figure in an atheist's life is God.
And the most prominent figure in my teenage life was Trent Reznor.
Totally. That's because you were a Christian all along, and you're going to heaven, whether you like it or not. But like for someone like him, for someone like for that kind of music, this misconception that it's like about evil and about dark and whatever, nobody is like that. Okay.
Still on this album, he sings, "Your God is dead, and no one cares. If there is a hell, I'll see you there."
Yes, but don't you see what a tacit endorsement that is of a God-centered worldview?
That's an interesting viewpoint.
It is. Nobody says like. There is no God. Everything sucks because there is no God, unless they really want there to be a God. And God only exists by virtue of us wanting him to exist.
One interesting thing about this song is that Trent Reznor wrote it about like intense depression.
Totally.
And then it turned into this sex anthem. It took on a life of its own.
Fuck,
and you know, it always appears on lists of the best music for strippers to take their clothes off to.
Yeah, but you know what? Strippers know what's
up. You know, it's right next to Let's Get It On by Marvin Gaye or Darling Nikki by Prince.
Right.
Speaking of strippers, by the way, I think...
I'm a stripper. Don't you realize that? Don't you realize what I do is actually stripping, plebeian?
They say that they're exotic dancers.
Yeah, but no, not stripper. Like, they don't... Yeah, I mean, stripping to that song makes perfect sense. I don't think that, like, there's a lot of things about that song or the way that people identify with that song that don't, like, because there are people who listen to that song and think like, yeah, sexual violence, fuck yes, yes, fucking like an animal, that's what that, like, one-to-one literal, like, that is terrifying and monstrous and just dumb, and those people should. And most people shouldn't be allowed to listen to music. You know what I mean? Because they use it in the way that the military uses music. The military weaponizes music. They will, like, torture people with music.
True Comedy, your new album, is in large parts about the world coming to its end. About the apocalypse.
No. No.
Really?
No. It's not...
It felt quite pessimistic.
If we start at the end of the album...
Well, you find some kind of peace at the end, but...
Well, it's not about the end of the world. It's about the fact that we always think we're living in the end of the world. Every generation has thought that they were living...
Because that makes them feel important, right?
Yeah, that's the comedy. Is that like every generation thinks the second generation of human beings thought it was the end. They thought, oh my God, we're never going to survive. We're never going to survive this shit. Like our the key, where all the semen is held is in a diaphanous crepe, like dangling between my legs at like saber-toothed tiger level. Like we're never going to make it. And all they have to do is wipe out like the six of us. I have no idea what I'm talking about. I am not a scientist. This is pure speculation. This is basically the equivalent of like a Far Side cartoon. But every generation thinks it's the end, you know, because we're so vain and we're so like poetic and philosophical and insane.
Because it's a good feeling living at the end of time.
Yeah, because we're kind of narcissists. So we think like that if we're going to die, everything's going to die. We really think...
Yeah, that's like, what did Napoleon say? After me, the downfall.
Right.
Flames so hot that they turn blue.
This is a track that you appeared in the video to.
Palms reflecting in your eyes, like an endless summer. That's the way I feel for you.
That's my girl,
Lana Del Rey's Freak.
If time stood still, I'd take this moment, make it last forever. Your halo's full of fire. I'm rising up, rising.
Do you know why she wanted you to act in a video about tripping on acid? Because you were acting, right?
Yeah, no, those were like breath strips, clearly. Well, I don't know. Can I tell you, I want to put this on the record just somewhere, okay? This fucking perception of her, which has seems to have like waned in recent years, that she's in some way like a fraud or something. It makes me want to kill the world. Because this is someone who is like... We're talking about someone for whom cynicism is not like... doesn't exist for her. And that's not even to say that she's like some kind of drooling savant or something. She knows what she's doing. But there's like... When this like claim of... When this like charge of like... weird calculated cynicism was brought against her, just as someone who knows her, it's frustrating. But also when you look at like what passes for, it took like Taylor Swift getting busted on Snapchat or whatever it was for people to even go like, huh, I think there might be something disingenuous about this whole thing, let me get out my magnifying glass and my sleuth cap. But there might be something about this that's a little weird. Lana is a fucking genius. Like a melodic genius. A lyrical genius.
You know, you're kind of preaching to the choir here. Because I think she's the best artist of this decade.
She's
the most interesting artist to come along in a very long time.
And understands that in the postmodern era, that part of being iconic is recognizing iconography. She's just playing, she is playing 12-dimensional chess, but totally subconsciously, because she's too fucking good. She's not like me. Like, I'm like a deranged little, like, worm man who has to, like, consider everything and ruin my life, overthinking shit. Lana is the real fucking deal. I've never seen anyone come up with lyrics and melodies that were so dead on with such effortlessness.
Still, I think that you have quite a few things in common. Most of all, that you both created these larger-than-life characters when you started to make music. Like, Elizabeth Grant became Lana Del Rey, and Joshua Tillman became Father John Misty.
Right.
Like, by putting on masks, you kind of became more authentic and more real than you were before you put on those masks.
Well, masks, there is like, we forget that like masks have been around for a real fucking long time. And we want to pretend that our age is so pure and authentic that like we don't need masks anymore. Are you fucking kidding me? For people like Lana and I, we understand that the definition of grotesque. That grotesque doesn't mean a big, flashy, scary mask. It means a mask that looks human, but has like one tweak that makes it really disturbing. If you're gonna get on stage, then fucking put something cool on and put on a fucking show. Don't stand up there and pretend like you just got off the fucking squash farm, you know? Like, fuck that.
I can't believe how good this tequila is.
No, it's so good.
Cheers.
But
and I haven't had tequila for ages.
Tequila's the best. It's the only...
this is Reposado, 100% agave.
It's the only upper out of alcohol, which I hear is an old wives' tale, but I choose to believe it.
I don't even feel drunk. I feel energetic. Famous last words.
You know what? Fuck her. It's true. It is true. Because I have drank whiskey like so infrequently in the last... I don't know. It's been fucking years now. I won't go anywhere near whiskey. I had whiskey a few months ago. It fucked me up. I had the spins. I haven't had the spins in like 10 years.
You know, I'm so old I can't drink whiskey because I get such hangovers.
No. You know, Willie Nelson said the only thing that ever hurt me was brown.
And he was talking about whiskey, of course.
Talking about whiskey.
Yeah.
And you know that guy... If he was hanging out with Waylon,
cheers,
and he was doing cocaine, you know, Waylon Jennings didn't drink. He never drank. He just did cocaine. Like a guy who just partied on cocaine. No booze. I don't even know what that would be like, because booze mitigates the effects of cocaine.
I guess he really loved cocaine, and then he decided to get sober.
Yeah, but he got sober fucking a day too late. Have you read his autobiography ever?
No, I haven't.
I highly recommend it. It is insane. It is so poorly written until the moments when it's fucking Shakespeare. He goes on to these tangents where he just goes like fully psychedelic and like... Totally like
anachronistic?
Anachronistic. Thank you. Jesus, I was about to try to say anachronological. Anachronological. He goes anachronistic and just jumps around and it becomes incredible. And he tells these stories about like him and his running buddy taking speed and driving whatever that interstate is in Texas and just like hitting pinball places, like taking speed and then just driving through Texas playing pinball.
Sunday morning brings the dawn in. It's just a restless feeling by my side.
I'd like to play you a song that you've covered live a few times, I think. I was listening to this last Sunday because, you know, this album, it was precisely 50 years since it was released. The Velvet Underground and Nico, the Banana album.
It's been 50
years. It's 50 years old.
Jesus Christ.
And it was funny because I used to play this song on Sundays when I was, you know, hungover or just wasted from the night before. So this was really a soundtrack to, you know, being messed up. And now, yeah, I played it while making banana smoothie for my kids.
Oh.
So the banana was still there and, you know, it was just in a totally new context. Oh. And it was still a great song.
Absolutely. That's, I mean, I have nothing to add to that. That's perfection.
So, Father John, here's a song that I... The first time I heard your music, I came to think of this album, which was recorded by one of the most underrated drummers of all time. So I assume perhaps you can relate to...
Oh, you know,
the prejudice that drummers go through. You know, there were a lot of drummer jokes. Like, yeah, you know, what was the last thing the drummer said before being kicked out of the band?
No, you tell me.
Guys, I wrote a few songs. Anyway, here's a great drummer.
Do you know how he died? You know, he died like in the fetal position.
Dennis Wilson, River Song.
Of a bay.
Yeah, he was the only beach boy who surfed. And right, he was also the only beach boy who drowned, but not surfing though.
He was diving for his shit that he had thrown off his boat, like in a coke like bender.
And then he drowned.
He went to go try to like salve it. He went to go like diving to get his stuff back. But they say that when they found him, he was curled up, like, peacefully in the fetal position.
On the bottom of the ocean?
Yes, yes. Which is, like, not how... Which is not, I guess, the state that you typically find people in when they've drowned. So he had, like, fully...
You know, I've read a lot of things about the Beach Boys, but I didn't know that thing.
Yeah.
Fetal position at the bottom of the ocean.
If you find out otherwise, don't tell me, because I need this story.
Sure. On your new record, you've worked with Gavin Bryars.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps we could listen to his song, Jesus' Blood Never Failed Me Yet. I'm not sure if you've heard this one.
Never failed me yet. Never failed me yet. Jesus' blood never failed me yet. This one thing I know.
So Gavin Bryars is a British classical avant-garde composer, and he did the string arrangements for your new album.
Yeah, I feel like...
On the choral arrangements as well.
Yeah.
And this track was him recording a homeless person in the street in London.
It was a movie.
And then building a symphony around his voice.
Yeah, it was a movie that his friend was making, a documentary that his friend was making, and he just happened to hear that. Why? Because he was going through editing the footage. Like, when I think about music and what music is for and what music can do, I think about that piece of music or My First Homage or Sinking of the Titanic or, like, pieces of music that you can, like, live to, you know? Like, that are, like, life-saving pieces of music. In a perfect world, Gavin Bryars' involvement in this record would be the talking point of this record. Every interviewer would be going, Gavin Bryars, Gavin Bryars, Gavin Bryars. You know, if we lived in like a good world. He had never done anything like this before, you know? And like, he came into the studio and did something he'd never done before at 80. That's where I would, you know, God, I should be so lucky, you know? Amazing. Cheers.
I'd like to play one last song. Here's another song that you've played live. I love Rihanna's voice. So this is Kiss It Better. There's a kind of a weird 80s like heavy metal guitar solo at the beginning of the song.
Yeah. That's,
which is not something that you would expect from an album that was released like in 2016.
No, it's gross. I mean, this is contentious because like I know the guy who produced that song and I know the story behind that song and I know that the original guitar part like was way cooler.
But you know, it feels ironic in a way.
Yeah, but I don't like that. I mean, it's like the song succeeds despite the grossness of that tone, and like the hand, it's gross. Like the song is so beautiful. Like I don't like things. I hate ironic music. No one else gon' get it like that. So why are you here to take me back? Who cares when it feels like crack? This has been wonderful. Like we're gonna turn the laptop off and then we're gonna continue to talk about just deliciously scintillating
tequila.
Like, yeah, tequila. It's gonna, like, you're gonna miss,
you know, this is the best
everything.
Tequila I've ever had.
It is. I'm so glad that you can,
you know,
appreciate
we're not
the goodness
having it with, you know, lemon and salt or anything.
No,
this works on its own.
Oh yeah,
this is so good,
darling. This is like, I am loving this. This is fucking,
you know, it's
wonderful.
Been a true pleasure having you here, Father
thank
John.
You my pleasure.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.